broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Episode 911 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jesse Dalamore, and I'm joined, as always, by the lovely, talented, and indeed scholarly, Brittany Page.
Well, we're back to our normal environment where we are sitting by ourselves in a room with no people around, talking into a camera.
No live studio audience.
Yeah, we did a live event. We were invited to give a talk on our respective journeys from white supremacy, conservatism, and white Christian nationalism to progressive activism, which we do now. And that we were invited by the Triangle Freethought Society to give a talk in North Carolina. And it went really well.
Yeah.
It went really well. It was our first time doing something like that. Like I said, we're normally just sitting in a room together talking into a camera or by ourselves sitting in a room talking into a camera.
And sometimes not even a camera, just a microphone and a recording device.
Yeah. And so we haven't really stood before an audience and talked about our personal stories. And we have been talking about starting to do live events, and that would look very different, I think, from the event that we did in for the Triangle Freethought Society. But how was it for you, Jesse? How was it doing the speaking before the live audience about your journey from those previously mentioned things to progressive activism?
I mean, it was great. It was interesting. It was a learning process. It was something different I've never done before. So, like, I'm more of an extemporaneous speaker. I don't do well. Like, I had a hard time following my notes because I don't just stand in one place, and like there was no teleprompter. So I'd walk around a little bit, shift and shimmy, and then lose my place in my notes. But, you know, I was overall very, very pleased with the audience reception. A lot of people came up afterward and wanted to say hi and take pictures and ask follow-up questions even after the Q&A session. It was awesome. And also, there was a lot of people. I mean, it was a room, so it wasn't like a giant auditorium, and they ran out of chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people showed up. It was great.
Yeah, great for the organization, and it was a cool thing. I definitely got nervous at the start of my talk because I showed some childhood photos that I will sometimes show to people when I'm meeting with people like on a one-on-one basis, and I start talking about my background being raised in the white power movement. And the photos I have never shared publicly because once I do that, they will no longer belong to me.
But you never tweeted them out. You've never posted them online.
Yeah.
And I
try to be thoughtful about it because it's true that once I put them out into the world, they will no longer belong to me, and I can't control how they're used or who posts them. And so that's kind of a daunting reality. But I decided to show them during the presentation. It's not the first time I've done that. I actually had to do a presentation in grad school where I had to talk about my cultural upbringing and my childhood. And so I showed one picture in particular of me and my sister sitting in front of a swastika flag hanging in our garage when we were kids. And it's always something that when I am showing it to people one-on-one, they are like horrified by it.
Like audible gasps oftentimes.
Yeah. And I guess I wasn't prepared for standing in front of an audience of people and seeing that look on more than one person's face, okay?
But it was a replicated the one-on-one moment just en masse.
Yes, and I was not prepared for that. And so it made me a little nervous at first when I started talking. And there were a lot of things that I forgot to cover. But I think ultimately it went pretty well for my first time doing something like that and showing those pictures. And I'm grateful to the audience for being super cool about it and asking a lot of really great questions. The Q&A, I think, was my favorite part, where we were able to just talk about things, you know, off the cuff. And we want to give a shout out to Marcus and Vicky. Because
hello, Marcus.
Marcus is, of course, a longtime supporter, longtime listener of the show. And Marcus and Vicky are just some of the best people that you will ever meet. It's just beautiful humans. And we're so grateful to know them. They are awesome people. And we're grateful for their friendship. And we met several listeners and some Patreon supporters came out. Like, shout out to Noah. Noah, yeah. We're waiting to hear from you on your graduate school decision and
a past voicemail sender inner.
Yes.
Noah.
And there was, I think, Tina and another Vicky, not Marcus Vicky, but another Vicky that came out. And then there was also Oz Zagsloth. And hopefully I'm saying it right this time. I practiced.
Patron.
Yes, a Patreon supporter who came out. And, you know, we're just grateful that people took time out of their Saturday to come and hang out with us and chat with us about politics, you know, whatever came up. It was awesome.
And he drove in from, like, Charlotte.
Oh, wow.
Govslav or what?
Zagsloth.
Yeah. Yeah, he drove in from Charlotte.
So yeah, thank you for that, and look forward to more announcements about live events. They won't be like us standing in front of a PowerPoint talking about our personal histories. We're hoping to do live events where it's more like the show format,
yeah,
where we
do
like a Taking Care of Biz, and we do listener communication, but it's from the audience, you know, stuff like that is more what we're thinking.
Would be great. And we may or may not, I haven't gotten the audio yet, but we may even release the talk in some format, maybe as a bonus episode, or maybe just release it as an episode. We haven't heard it, so I don't know how quality or what we could do with it. So
yeah.
So again, thanks to Marcus and Vicky. You guys are just amazing, and it's one of the innumerable benefits of having started the show and had the community build up around the show is that we get to meet and grow relationships with certain you know, whatever the number is in our audience, and Marcus and Vicky are absolutely among them. We love and appreciate you guys very much. Real quickly, can I plug something?
I mean, this is your show too, so yeah, you get to plug whatever you want. That's the benefit of having your show, I think. Having a show, you get to plug stuff.
Well, the other co-host in my life is Ian Brinksman, and we are right now recording. In fact, the episode 3 goes up on Monday at 2 p.m.
Ooh.
The John Adams podcast that we've got a bobblehead right next to you of Ian's mug.
Yeah.
And a bunch of John Adams paraphernalia around us.
Don't remind me.
This is going up on YouTube at 2 p.m. on Mondays every episode. We may do 10. And then also it's on audio. So if you have Apple Podcasts or if you have wherever you listen to podcasts, go search out HBO's John Adams podcast. I keep doing that too. And subscribe to the audio version as well as checking out what it is on YouTube.
Yeah, and if you love history, if you love critiques of presidents, if you love Jesse D.
Yeah, more importantly.
If you love Ian, then you should definitely listen to the show. It's very entertaining. I think it's more entertaining than watching HBO's John Adams. And did I do it too?
John Adams. No, I think you did it right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do want to say, though, Ian launched a vicious attack on me on the upcoming episode, and Jesse played it for me, I think, to prepare me for the vicious attack that is to come.
Does it make you more nervous than showing your Nazi childhood pictures, the vicious attack?
No, it made me enraged, and I'm actually going to set a trap for him next time he shows up at the studio here.
Wow.
And we're going to fight. It's going to be a fight club.
Podcast coming soon to ears and eyes near you.
But we have more housekeeping in addition to Jesse plugging his other podcast. is we do bonus episodes for our Patreon supporters for this here podcast, I Doubt It Podcast. Which is continuing. People.
Yeehaw! This here podcast. Doo-doo-doo-doo.
Really, proceed. The music should play whenever I talk, especially about my background. And so, for our Patreon supporters, well, first of all, people were worried that this show was ending when Jesse announced that he was doing his show with Ian. They're like, what's happening to the other shows? Because people get freaked out by change. And that's, you know, we get that. But no, the show is not ending after 10 years and almost 900 episodes. It's still
almost 925 episodes.
Yeah, it's still continuing. So one thing that we do for our Patreon supporters is bonus episodes, and we do them once a month, and we got such great feedback on our most recent one where Jesse and I listed our 10 hates and 10 loves. I stole this idea from an account called Dream Baby Press, where they ask like figures in the media to list their 10 loves and 10 hates. And people just love this. We had a Patreon supporter, Ryan, who says, you got me crying here with some of these. We had Isaac, a Patreon supporter, who said, man, I love these bonus episodes and this is the best one so far. We had Bryant, who said, I love these bonus episodes so much. These love and hates are so relatable, and it's such a great reminder about how much we all have in common, despite the siloing of our culture and how isolating it can be.
Wow.
I laughed out loud several times throughout and look forward to more bonus content like this.
That's an amazing response.
I know. It was awesome. So we would appreciate it if you guys would check that out for Patreon supporters. Make sure you're listening to those bonus episodes and take advantage of that.
We've had some people reach out and say we should make that one public to titillate the audience to become a patron. We haven't decided on whether we want to do that or not. Maybe we'd just open it up to the rest of the audience and see if they'd be interested.
Yeah, pressure us and we'll do it.
Yeah. So thank you guys. We listen, anytime somebody gives positive feedback on the content that we create, on the shows that we do, it means a lot, because let me tell you, even on bonus episodes, work goes into that. It's not just sit. I mean, we both think about it. We put lists together. It's the same kind of preparative advance work that gets done for any other episode. So thank you.
Yes, thank you.
All right, moving on to today's sponsor, Uplift Standing Desk. In this increasingly technological world that we live, we only seem to spend more time hunched over our gadgets, legs pretzeled and twisted and backs arched, staring at the almighty screen. We are better than this. We need to stand up for ourselves, improve our bodies and our brains.
That's why Jesse and I changed to an Uplift Standing Desk. Standing while prepping the show has completely improved our efficiency by amplifying our focus and boosting the flow of ideas and blood circulation. Studies have shown using a standing desk can also increase your energy and lower your risk of disease. Your health and work deserve a raise.
Go to UpliftDesk.com/IDoubtIt and use code IDoubtIt at checkout to get 5% off and take your fitness and productivity to new heights. You know, raising standing desk. With over 6,000 five-star Google reviews, we're not the only satisfied customers. The New York Times Wirecutter has chosen Uplift Desk as their standing desk of choice for 5 years running.
Since Uplift Desks are super stable, you can switch between sitting and standing configurations with the single tap of a button. And there's more than 100 desktop styles and tons of accessories to choose from, including 4 for free with every desk purchase. Uplift Desk also offers a 15-year warranty, free shipping, and free returns with free return shipping.
Are you ready to prioritize your health and productivity? Move more with Uplift Desk. Head to UpliftDesk.com/IDoubtIt or just click the link below to score 5% off of your first purchase when you use code IDoubtIt at checkout. Work better, live healthier with Uplift Desk. So thank you to Uplift Desk for sponsoring a portion of today's episode. We appreciate it very much. Moving on, listen, part of the whole giddy up, if you will, up to going back to the banjo music, the giddy up, part of the makeup of the show has been formed, and the mission of the show has been changed over time based on listener communication, which we're going to get to now. If you'd like to communicate with the show, it is 657-464-7609. That is our Google voicemail number at which you can leave a fewer than 3-minute voicemail You will get cut off if it goes over, just based on the programmatic requirements of Google. You can also email a voice memo from your smartphone or a regular old-fashioned email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. What do we got, Brittany Page?
We are going to start with an email. An email to follow up on some news from our previous episode about a recall election that was taking place in Oklahoma after a city council member there, Judd Blevins, was exposed.
Judd Blevins.
His ties to white supremacy were uncovered. So this is an email that we received. Good morning, Jesse and Brittany. And of course, an extra special good morning, Sweepy. I wanted to let you guys know that I get to be really proud of my state today. In Enid, they ousted the white supremacist Judd Blevins, and here in Tulsa, in my district, we blocked the Moms for Liberty candidate for the Oklahoma School Board.
Very good!
Also, Jesse, I saw that Garrison Hayes' YouTube channel got a 10,000 subscriber bump from you. That's awesome AF. Thank you all, Sweepy included, for everything you do. I love you all, and your righteous indignation is the best part. Your friend, Rick from Tulsa.
Rick from Tulsa. Thank you, Rick. Listen, good news did come out of Oklahoma. And there was a little bit of good news for my new pal, Garrison Hayes. Which, by the way, I guess we should just plug him now.
Yeah, that's a fantastic channel. He's awesome. He makes great videos. And you shouted out some of his work in your recent video. And he did get this tremendous subscriber bump. That's so awesome.
Yeah. And also well deserved. We talk a lot about luck on this show. We talk about how lucky we are to have achieved whatever modicum of success we have doing what we do, whether it be the podcast or on YouTube. Absolutely 80% because of luck, 85% of luck. Some people would disagree and think it's all luck. They're wrong, but you know, what are you going to do?
And some people would say there's no luck.
Right. That's absolutely false. And Garrison Hayes not having the number of subscribers that he deserves is just more proof of this. He's putting in good work, doing amazing reporting, highlighting issues that don't get enough attention. And hopefully now it's like just the beginning of him kicking ass on YouTube. So go subscribe to Garrison Hayes. And thanks to the listener. Right. For sharing that. I would have not remembered to even talk about it.
Yes. So we have another email before we get to some voicemails. This is also about our previous episode where we had Ian, Jesse's other co-host for the HBO's John Adams podcast. Be sure to check that out. New episode dropping Monday. And you see how smooth that was?
Working real hard. That's good.
Better be getting a commission. So this is
there is no commission to be had.
This is from Mitch from Canada. Dear Jesse and Brittany, as a devoted listener from Canada, I felt compelled to share my thoughts for the first time, particularly after listening to your discussion on episode 910, which tackled listener feedback regarding abortion rights. The discussion struck me as an example of candy politics, where votes are like treats given to favored politicians. The commentary seemed to frame the Democratic Party's worthiness for votes as being the lesser of two evils, focusing less on tangible policy achievements. While I acknowledge that no party is perfect, I found the tone somewhat cynical. It seemed to imply that, quote, the Democrats' lack of specific accomplishments was due to not trying at all. This perspective overlooks the intricate realities of political representation and the progress made in response to constituents' demands. A quick look at the legislative history of the Democratic-led Congresses would reveal their efforts in addressing the very issues that some critics claim to have completely ignored. Moreover, blaming the entire Democratic Party for not securing abortion rights seems unfair, especially considering it wasn't a top priority for many voters at the time. Even then, very many Democrats in Congress made multiple efforts to get legislation passed to address these issues. See, for example, the history of each act. The same can be said about immigration reform, gun regulation. I believe it is the job of media, especially left-leaning media, to inform the public about the work that Democrats in Congress are doing, even failed attempts. Failing to do that gives the erroneous impression that they aren't trying. Voters need to know the reasons why attempts failed and the policy and the specific politicians responsible, if any. For example, Kyrsten Sinema, Joe Manchin. Elections should then focus on which specific candidates are best equipped to represent our interests and drive positive change, not on rewarding or punishing a generic, amorphous entity called the Democrats. A candidate's accomplishments should be evaluated based on the priorities of voters during his tenure, not merely on retrospective critiques over a period when issues were not prioritized by voters. I hope the next time you feel tempted to criticize the Democrats in this way, the phrase rolls off your tongue and falls on the floor, and you will instead focus on specific actions by specific Democrats or specific policies and actions of the Democratic Party. Please leave the phrase "the Democrats" to Jimmy Dore and Tulsi Gabbard. Thank you for your engaging content. Mitch from Canada.
Well, Mitch, listen, thank you for a very well-written, well-constructed email that is filled with all kinds of nuttiness. I'm teasing about the nuttiness. But listen, if you want to talk about policy achievements, I wish you would have listed some. What have the Democrats done to secure abortion rights in this country since Roe was affirmed by the Supreme Court in 1973? I'll wait. Where's my crickets? Obviously, I will be waiting a long time because there has been nothing done to secure abortion rights, to codify abortion rights in this country by Democrats, by any Democrats. And to say that it wasn't a priority, I mean, they haven't done anything because it wasn't a priority. Maybe it's folly of me to assume that you are a man. But maybe it wasn't a priority for you. Certainly not, being a Canadian. But I can tell you there are tens of millions of voters in this country for whom abortion rights were a priority, and it was just ignored by the Democrats. I am a lot of things. Cynical is not one. But I am absolutely pointing to items like you want media to do. You want us to educate. You want us to point out these things, educate our audiences. That's what we're doing by pointing out, and by virtue of pointing it out, hopefully pressuring the Democrats to do something when they do gain a majority in both houses of Congress and the presidency. And hopefully, based on our efforts to educate our audience, gain an obstructionist proof majority in those houses.
So I disagree with Mitch. So I guess I was going to say I disagree with you, but there's nothing I can really point to other than I agree with what Mitch is saying. And I tried to get out in front of this a little too late in the episode on 9/10, where I specifically, I don't remember what the conversation was, but it was a long time after we had had this conversation that Mitch is referencing here about the Democrats and their failure to codify Roe and get out in front of this problem. And I brought it back around to, well, the Democrats need to have a majority in the House and the Senate, and they need to have the presidency in order to fully enact legislation that they need to enact, because otherwise Republicans are going to get in the way. Kyrsten Sinema is going to get in the way. Joe Manchin is going to get in the way. That's also why we need to elect progressives. And Ian didn't like that response. He was like, oh, so we just have to keep voting for Democrats because blah, blah, blah. And we're like, well, yeah, so that's what we need to do. So I tried to get out in front of this criticism, is what I'm saying, from Mitch, by bringing it back around to the representation difficulty, where it is more nuanced than just the Democrats failed to do this, the Democrats failed to do that. And I understand what Mitch is saying, for sure. I do think there are difficulties when you're having a live conversation with somebody in getting to all of those things, because we could sit around and talk about that for an hour, but we can't do that with the show. We had other stuff that we needed to get to.
That's true, for sure.
And I know that just sounds like an excuse, but it's true. Like, we kind of have this balance of there's some stuff that I need to challenge, but I need to like move this along. And that balance, I think I failed during that initial conversation. And that's why I attempted to bring it back around to kind of correct the record a little bit. So, you know, it wasn't well done. It was messy. And I definitely take responsibility for that, because we do take our platform seriously, and we do want to be a show that gets to the nuances here with a lot of this stuff. And so, you know, yeah, of course, we can talk about the American Rescue Plan. We can talk about the CHIPS Act. The Democrats have a lot of achievements under their belt in working with a, you know, a difficult Republican Party that is only prioritizing Trump and election denialism, you know. And Joe Manchin, you know, luckily is going away. Kyrsten Sinema is going away. But hopefully those two examples are lessons to people about what does happen when we don't have progressives in positions of power. Like, that is what is hindering this. And we try to talk about that quite often. So we, could we do that more? Of course. And I think that, you know, this is a good reminder that we should do that.
So thank you very much for the email, Mitch. I would put a call out to the audience. There have been many times over the course of American political history since 1973 that Democrats have held both the executive in the presidency and both houses of Congress. Somebody, please, please let me know some cogent, workable, effective, transformative legislation that has been passed to protect abortion rights in this country. Somebody. I'll be waiting for that. I think we have a voicemail here from Chicago.
Hey, Jesse. Hey, Brittany. Love your work. Love you guys. This is Julia calling from Chicago. Just want to say that, you know, I'm not sure what your belief system is at this point. I believe it's non-existent. You used to maybe have one and that didn't work out well. And I totally get that. But there are many liberal voters who have a faith in a higher power. I am one of them. My faith has evolved over time. I certainly don't associate with anything like evangelical Christian behavior at all. But it just makes me sad to see all the attacks on anyone who has any beliefs in the comment section of your YouTube channel, David Packman's and other progressive channels. It really makes me sad. And maybe I'm just an idiot for thinking that we deserve respect too, but anyway, appreciate the work that you both do and keep it up. God bless. Take care. Whatever those suits you. Okay. Bye.
You are not, did you say an idiot for thinking that you deserve respect? Because that's definitely not the case.
Nor is your opinion idiotic.
Yeah. First I want to jump back to the comment. It made me smile at the beginning when Julia said that they are unaware of what our belief system is now. Maybe it's non-existent. And okay, I mean, like, even if you're not a believer, I don't know that non-existent is the best description there, because I would say, obviously, I've been on a journey with that. I no longer would consider myself a believer, but
it's a very Christian-centric thing to say.
Yeah, my belief system is humanism, and so that is what my belief system is. I wouldn't say that it's non-existent. I would say that I prioritize what is best for people and what's best for people on Earth and how we're going to move forward and the progress that we can make to improve people's lives right now.
Not being a Christian doesn't mean you don't believe anything.
Yeah, and you know, this is a good example of something that happened at the event, actually, that we just spoke at, the Triangle Freethought Society, where it is an organization of non-believers, whatever their label may be, atheist, agnostic,
humanist,
whatever the label. Yeah. And there were people that came to the event who knew nothing about the organization, who came up to us afterwards and were like, What's going on here? Like, are you a part of this? Because I'm a believer and I don't know what this is. And I think the organization accepts advocacy and support from anyone as long as they have shared values. And it really comes down to that. And Julia, you're making it sound like you have shared values. So you don't consider yourself to be a white Christian nationalist. You consider yourself to be a believer. And yeah, I don't think that anyone should be disrespected because they believe in God. I don't appreciate the community of atheists, for example, who use things like Sky Daddy and talk about things in negative terms like that. I think it's insulting. And obviously, religious belief can be a powerful motivator for people to get out of bed, to not feel depressed. I have seen this in my work as a therapist. So I would never disrespect someone for choosing to believe as long as they don't weaponize that belief and then hurt other people.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I had a young guy come up to me afterward at the talk, and he asked me this very question, like, Where are you? I'm just curious. Do you have some do you hold derision toward Christians? And I said, look, I obviously grew up in this faith tradition. I no longer share those beliefs. But as long as you're not, like you just said, weaponizing your faith, as long as you're not using your faith as a cudgel against other people and harming other people and using it to justify bigotry and oppression, great. If it enriches your life, awesome. And that's a true heartfelt belief. If you feel fulfilled by a belief system that doesn't harm someone else, then lean into that. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful.
Absolutely. And we're sorry that you are seeing hatred in the comments. We can't control what is in the comments. We also get hatred in the comments. It's a part of, I would say YouTube comments are some of the most toxic places to read comments.
Maybe even worse than Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, maybe other than like the Food Network Facebook page, YouTube is the most abusive place to find comments. So if you can, try to avoid it.
Yeah, let me also say this. Relative to the atheist abuse people, one of the other, this conversation happened multiple times after the event. We went and had some snacks at a restaurant with a big group of people. And people were talking about, oh, do you go to American Atheist Convention? Do you do this atheist convention, this whatever? And I'm not interested in those. And one of the reasons I'm not interested in those is because of the disrespectful, aggressive, I would say hateful messages on T-shirts that people wear, like with fuck your God and it's Jesus being crucified. Like that's just an example out of my head. There are a million more. Just disrespectful, hateful, hurtful, meaning to get under the skin and harm someone about something they believe deeply about. I'm not interested in that. And it's because of those people that very quickly when we've gone to any atheist quote-unquote event, I was turned off and really just distanced myself from that movement, from that community, because I'm not interested in harming someone, hurting someone about something they feel very strongly and deeply about. If they're not using it to harm someone, let them, who cares? You know, I understand what Julia's talking about there.
Yeah, and I just want to say that they're related to this and what you were just saying, Jesse, about the different approaches that atheists can have. I think a lot of times we think of atheists as being like angry, and that can kind of be the stereotypical way. I think it's important to note that not all atheists feel that way. And I've been interested in if there's any research out there on kind of the journey of people coming out of their religious belief, and if it's almost like the grieving process, you know, where
sure.
Maybe you are angry and just the different ways that people can come out of the faith and how they tend to then view their previous belief and other people's belief. But I ended up writing an article years ago related to some research that I did for my thesis in grad school. It's called The Three Shades of Atheism, and it's online, and maybe we'll link to it. And then
it was published in Skeptic Magazine, right?
Yeah. And there,
it was published in Michael Shermer's magazine, right? The wonderful guy, Michael Shermer?
Yes. And so it's related to the different types of atheism, though, that there are people who are very strident in their belief that there's not a God. And then there's people who are like, you know, yeah, I don't know for sure, but I don't believe in God. And yeah, it's not really that big of a deal. So just like you have Christians that profess different types of belief and different adherence to that belief, you have atheists who are in the same boat. So I think a lot of times we can slip into these stereotypes of what they're like, but they are different, just like Christians or any other population that you would look to.
Yeah, I think my answer to the guy who came up to me was that given all the evidence we have, I don't believe it. And it's not that I don't believe in Jesus Christ. I don't believe in any of it, any gods or supernatural stuff. I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe in angels. I don't believe in heaven. I don't believe in hell. But that's just given what we know about the world and evidence. I just, yeah, you know, it's not hatefully like, that's bullshit. So I just don't see the need for the aggression and the shittiness that I've seen on display so often.
Yeah.
Awesome phone call. Awesome voicemail. Thank you, Julia, very much. Next up, another voicemail.
Hey, I just wanted to say I love you guys, and I hope you guys have a great day. Love and blessings to you.
That's the way you need to end listener communication. Are we done with listener communication?
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
I just wanted to have a nice little, you know, sometimes we get these calls where people just tell us that they love us and appreciate us. And that's a nice thing. Yeah. And I want people to know that even though we don't really play those, because it's, you know, kind of weird that we just played that one, but
it's kind of an S in our own D kind of a thing.
Yeah, but it's, it's, we hear it and we appreciate it and it's very nice.
Yeah,
so
not
thank you
lost
for that.
On
yeah,
us
thank
at
you
all.
For that.
If you too would like to sound off, get your voice on the record, literally and figuratively, it is 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email us, idoubtit@dollamore.com. We have some follow-up that you're going to want to listen to.
Before that, we want to thank our Patreon supporters.
Oh, and then we have some follow-up that you're going to want to listen to.
So thank you to our new Patreon supporters, Stacey R.
Stacey R.
Daniel F.
Daniel F.
Michael F.
Michael F.
Maybe not the pronunciation.
Maybe Funke.
Did I say pronunciation again? Pronunciation. Oh my God, the internet is going to attack me again. What am I doing? I'm walking.
Do you picture how the word is spelled when you say it?
No.
Because that, like I, the word scourge, I visualize the word in my head, and then I have to fight against the urge to call it scourge.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah, I need to start visualizing it, because it is very obviously in the spelling pronunciation. Yes, yes. Okay. At least I caught myself this time, everyone. All right. So I don't want to see any more comments. Blondie can't speak. Okay, I can. I did it. Okay.
So you're right now, you're drifting into Julia territory about the YouTube comments, because they're going to be, they're coming for you.
All right. So
they are coming for you.
Thank you to our new Patreon supporter, Anya EMB.
Anya EMB.
Kimba A.
Kimba A.
Who is a returning Patreon supporter. Yes. I recognize that name. Arthur S.
Arthur S.
Evgeny P.
Evgeny P.
God, I'm the worst. Iron Cat 60.
Iron Cat 60.
I love how I'm like, I can pronounce words. And then I get the next thing I read is like, it's okay. Francine M.
Francine M.
Thank you to all of our new Patreon supporters. Like we talked about at the top of the show, we do a monthly bonus episode. We used to do hangouts, and we haven't really talked about why we no longer do hangouts, but this is actually a good opportunity to talk about that, because they were not being utilized by a significant number of people, and we would hear feedback that it wasn't something people cared about, and that it would be better if we created a bonus that could be enjoyed by a larger number of
people. A wider percentage of the patrons, yeah.
Yeah, and so people seem to really like this bonus episode idea. We take a departure from talking about politics. We do more fun things, talk about songs that we like, talk about other types of media that we like. And it's lighter, and I think gives people a break from the stuff that we talk about here. So
it's lighter until we did the last one and both of us were crying for a substantial portion of the bonus episode.
But it was in a good way.
Yeah, no, it's not bad. It was not light. You don't lightly cry about how much you love Sweepy or whatever friends and their success and whatever else we've talked about.
Yeah, so that's why we made a transition there. But another benefit of Patreon is you get an ad-free version of the show, so you don't have to hear any ads, and that's nice for everybody. So feel free to check us out, patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast, and we would love to see you there.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom. noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
And now we have some follow-up that you're going to want to hear, and it's related to the quote-unquote goon squad in Mississippi that we've been covering for months, about this team of cops, this rogue team of cops. I always use that phrase, even though it seems kind of in line with what cops do nationwide. And they abused a black man who was being reported because he was staying with a white woman across the street or something.
Two black men.
Right. And they sexually abused. They shot one, put a loaded gun in his mouth. The trigger was pulled. I'm using passive language, tongue-in-cheek here. And they shot him in the face. He survived. And we have follow-up.
Well, we recently talked about this story because they were sentenced on federal charges, and now they've been sentenced on state charges.
And these are the longest and strongest sentences in United States history for any police officer. Right.
Judgment day for the goon squad. Five disgraced former Rankin County deputies and an ex-Richland police officer sentenced to additional prison time after a judge rejected state prosecutor's recommendation to give the men less time behind bars for abusing two black men.
Been a long year, man. Been a short year. I'm thankful for all y'all, you know, been here with us, man, for the ride. All y'all that, that helped us, you know, with this fight.
Victims Eddie Parker and Michael Jenkins speaking out after the judge handed down the sentences.
It really ain't been about me. You know, it's been about what they did to my mom, how they made her feel. And just to dictate and the bullying.
Sentences for Joshua Hartfield, Brett McAlpin, Jeffrey Middleton, Daniel Updike, and Christian Detman range from 15 years to 25 years. Hunter Elward, who shot Jenkins in the mouth, was given a 45-year prison sentence. Jenkins and Parker's attorney called the judge's ruling historic.
No police officer in the history of Rankin County has ever been held criminally responsible for harming anyone, let alone a black person.
The six men are already serving between 17 and a half years to 40 years in prison on federal charges. They will serve the state charges concurrent with the federal sentence. Prosecutors say in January 2023, the deputies handcuffed Jenkins and Parker and their Braxton home, then tased, beat, sexually assaulted, and subjected the men to racial slurs after the law officers accused them of dating white women. While the deputies are headed to prison, the fight for justice in Rankin County isn't over.
Brian Bailey should be on notice that he may be next.
The Rankin County NAACP still demanding Sheriff Brian Bailey resign and for the U.S. Justice Department to prosecute Bailey.
The sheriff, who we consider the leader of the goon squad.
That's right.
So we are going to continue our fight to remove him from office.
Now, the sheriff has said he was in the dark and wasn't aware of what the goon squad was up to. Rankin County facing a $400 million civil lawsuit. The victim's lawyers say a court judgment against the county could bankrupt Rankin County.
Listen, this is nothing but good news relative to consequence. When you have cops, multiple cops in this case, and you fostered a culture among these people who have arrest power, detain power, they are constitutionally authorized to carry a weapon and usurp people's constitutional rights, they should be held to a high standard of behavior. And this doesn't just miss the mark. They use their power and authority under the color of law to harm, to strip away people's civil rights, and they should never be let out of prison. Good for the 45 years, good for the 15 to 25 years. Absolutely, we need more of this in America because this isn't a one-off.
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing is we've gotten feedback where people are like, okay, but how representative is this goon squad across the nation? How many cops are operating as though they are in a gang? And I don't know that we have an answer to that question, but what we do know is that the goon squad, Rankin County, is not the only county where they have gangs of police that are behaving this way. And another example of this is in Los Angeles.
There's a different kind of gang problem in Los Angeles County. The people meant to serve and protect, a population of more than 9 million people, allegedly part of powerful gangs going back decades, according to watchdog groups and the alleged victims of their crimes. Groups of LA sheriff deputies with threatening names like the Banditos, the Cavemen, the Executioners. The deputies rep their cliques, tattooing their bodies with logos and throwing up gang signs. The gangs facing allegations they use violent excessive force against Angelenos.
To me, they're punks. The people that killed my sons, that executed my sons.
And intimidate fellow deputies who don't play along.
Dead rats in front of people's homes.
The terrorizing behavior costing the LA County taxpayers a fortune. The Inspector General's office counts $54 million in settlements involving deputy gang activity. The first obstacle to eradicating them, though, many past sheriffs dispute their very existence.
Well, you're still trying to pretend the deputy gang exists and work in the countryside of Philippines.
The investigation continues.
But the current sheriff, Robert Luna, who took office in late 2022, went public with his efforts to combat the problem.
We must eliminate deputy gangs.
A city and state approved civilian oversight commission released a 70-page report last year on how the sheriff's office should crack down on them. The commission's special counsel telling us they turned over a list of more than 20 recommendations. But so far, members of that oversight board, as well as attorneys for the victims, say Sheriff Luna hasn't put a stop to the gangs like he promised.
It's a lot bigger than one sheriff. It's sheriff after sheriff, administration after administration.
In a statement to NBC News, the LA Sheriff's Office say they've drafted a new law enforcement gang, clique, and subgroups policy, but that it's still under negotiation with the powerful deputies union.
We don't get it!
We're trying to publicize the existence of the deputy gangs and put the community in power over the gangs and over the sheriff's department itself.
In the meantime, a growing chorus in LA who say it's time to stop waiting for the county or the sheriff to clean things up.
If this gang problem isn't promptly solved, that the next logical step will be federal litigation, the appointment of a monitor, and oversight by a federal judge.
Other police departments who struggled with different issues like excessive force and police bias in cities like Detroit, Seattle, and Pittsburgh all saw what officials say were significant improvements under federal oversight. But the Department of Justice so far hasn't moved in that direction. NBC News reached out to the DOJ for comment but haven't heard back. If these alleged gangs are dealt with, it won't be soon enough for people like Sergeant Rosa Gonzalez, who claims she was retaliated against for speaking out against the East LA Banditos. Gonzalez declined an on-camera interview with NBC News, saying doing so would mean facing further consequences, proving the stronghold these supposed gangs still have over one of the largest populations in the country.
Priya Sridhar, NBC News.
So one thing that is difficult to do on this show is there's so much to talk about. There's so many different topics that we could be talking about. There's so many issues that we could be addressing, but we only have a limited amount of time. And we end up talking about cops a lot because I think this is one of the most important things that needs to be dealt with. I mean, similar to what Jesse just said, you have these individuals who are imbued with power from the state to carry weapons and restrict people's freedoms. And they are people that are in gangs and who are violent and who want to assault and hurt people. And that is very scary. And you know who they're going to be targeting. And I know that in Rankin County, we played a clip of a reporter talking about how they also went after white people, poor white people in the county. And there are going to be racist abuses that come out of this. They're going to be targeting people who are not white. They're going to be targeting people who live in poverty. They're going to be abusing vulnerable people who don't have the power to do anything about the abuse. And that's what's remarkable about there finally being consequences for the goon squad in Rankin County, but this needs to be dealt with too. And the media is doing a decent job of covering this, right? This was from mainstream media. This is NBC News. But more, we need to talk about this more. We need to cover this more so that people know that this is a significant problem.
And listen, I'd love to hear from conservatives out there who are like, well, they're just you know, criminals, all they got to do is just comply. And there's nothing that they're doing wrong because the people that are being targeted are criminals, quote unquote. They're also targeting other cops who don't want to participate in their gang thuggery. This needs to be rooted out. It's not that the gang problem needs to be rooted out. It's that when you find someone who is involved in this behavior, this illegal, organized crime, you fire the fuck out of them. You prosecute them. You send them to prison because they have abused their station in life, the power that has been granted to them by the government to lord over other people. This is beyond a cop who doesn't use his or her turn signal. This is someone who is abusing and up to and including assassination of other people while going under the gang moniker, the Executioners.
I know, dear Lord.
Ugh.
Yeah, so we would love to know what you think about this. You can call, leave us a voicemail, 657-464-7609, or send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
Let's talk, Brittany Page, about what is taking place right now in America, not about the Democrats, but about Republicans and abortion and what they are doing at every turn to turn this country. Listen, we're going back like a couple years when I critique the critique of people using The Handmaid's Tale as instruction about what Republicans want. People acted like that was too fantastical or whatever their critique was. But at every turn, it's exactly what Republicans are trying to do. And right now, Arizona are acting like maniacs, the Republican Party, in trying to uphold white Christian nationalism and the oppression of women related to the abortion issue.
Yeah, let's just talk about kind of the order that things happened this week. So Donald Trump had been talking about his long-awaited announcement that he was going to reveal his position on abortion.
I'm actually shocked that an announcement was made.
Well, and it's funny that he had to come out and be like, tease this announcement. Don't worry, I'm going to reveal what my position on abortion is after we figure out what's most politically expedient for me right now.
And then really didn't really come out with a definitive statement.
Right, other than stating what is already in place, which is that the states are able to determine what their own abortion bans are going to be. Then, after he made that statement, the Arizona Supreme Court came out and they upheld that this 1864 law that's on the books can stand, and it makes abortion a felony punishable by 2 to 5 years in prison for anyone who performs an abortion or helps a woman obtain an abortion. And it was codified in 1901 and again in 1913, and it outlaws abortion from the moment of conception, although it does include an exception for the life of the mother. But we know how well that's been playing out with these states that have similar exceptions. It doesn't work. And so, you know, this state came out and said, we're going to ban abortion based on this 1864 law before Arizona was a state, before women even had the right to vote. And obviously, that's an unpopular decision. And so Republicans started panicking, including Donald Trump. And he was asked by a reporter, did Arizona go too far? And he said, yes, they went too far. But I think everyone's going to come together and bring it back to a more reasonable place, including the governor, who, by the way, is a Democrat. So he's like passing it back to the Democrats to do something about the archaic abortion ban that has been brought into place in Arizona, completely ignoring the fact that Republicans exist in Arizona.
And they control the legislature.
Right. And completely ignoring the fact that Donald Trump is the reason all this is happening, because he appointed 3 Supreme Court justices that then really got in there and overturned Roe v. Wade.
And he's taking credit for the overturning of Roe v. Wade.
Right. So it's very convoluted, and we know what it is. It's transparent because they're afraid, because these abortion bans are unpopular. We're seeing the widespread damage. And, you know, the Arizona House actually blocked 2 efforts to overturn this near total ban from 1864. And when I say the Arizona House, I'm talking about Republicans, because Democrats tried to immediately do something about this so that people in Arizona are not going to be forced into a terrible situation where they're forced to carry a pregnancy in a situation that they don't want to. And Republicans instead said, no,
And Arizona Republicans are blocking efforts to repeal the state's near total ban on abortion access. Lawmakers on both sides had called for the repeal after the state Supreme Court affirmed the Civil War era law. But now some state Republicans are reversing course. Senior congressional correspondent Rachel Scott has the latest from Arizona.
The intense political fight playing out in Arizona. After the state Supreme Court's decision to reinstate a 160-year-old law banning abortions in all but one circumstance, for the life of the mother.
Should the 1864 ban on abortion remain the law in Arizona, people will die.
One day after the ruling, there was bipartisan outrage with state lawmakers on both sides pushing to repeal the law. But when Democrats in the state house tried to move forward with the vote, Republicans blocked it.
There is no reason to rush on this very important topic.
It was chaos, and all because our Republican majority refuses to do what they said they would do.
Donald Trump appointed three of the six Supreme Court justices who overturned Roe versus Wade, clearing the way for 21 states to ban or restrict access to abortion. But now Trump says Arizona went too far. Just weeks ago, Trump was floating the idea of a national abortion ban, but now he said he would not sign one. And he said states should decide whether doctors should face punishment for performing abortions.
Do you think a doctor should be punished who perform abortions?
I'll let that be to the states. You know, everything we're doing now is states.
Abortion providers like Dr. Jill Gibson could face fines and 5 years in prison under the ban.
How can we not have justices that recognize that a law that was enacted before Arizona was a state, before women had the right to vote, should be applicable in today's society?
The Biden campaign says it's Trump that owns the suffering and chaos happening right now. And soon voters in this critical battleground state could have the final say, with abortion rights expected to be on the ballot this November.
So how scared are Republicans? How scared are they? I mean, Donald Trump, he can't land on a position. He was even asked directly by a reporter, are you pro-choice or pro-life? Because he's changed his position on abortion like 15 times. So they asked him directly, are you pro-choice or pro-life? And he responded, you know which one it is, right? He's so scared right now that he can't even come out and be direct on this issue because he knows that these abortion bans that are his doing are unpopular and are possibly going to burn him. You know who else knows? And this is a great example about how scared they are. Sean Hannity.
Oh,
Sean,
yeah.
Hannity actually had the audacity to go on his show. And this clip that I'm about to play for you is after. It takes place after what you just heard with those Arizona Republicans shutting down the attempt to repeal this archaic law. He actually has the audacity to go on his show. And I guess we'll just play it for you.
Trump opposes the law and this ruling, or you can believe Joe's make pretend Donald Trump that doesn't exist. And you know what? Arizona's governor is a Democrat. The state's attorney general is a Democrat. The state legislature is almost evenly divided. If Democrats, you want to get rid of the law, well, you have a chance right now to get rid of it. And I would advise you, get rid of it. They would rather use it as a political tool ahead of November.
The state legislature's almost evenly divided is a hell of a way to say a Republican majority.
I know.
God damn, he's not good at what he does.
In fact, so in the House in Arizona, there are 29 Democrats, 31 Republicans. So there's more Republicans. Are you hearing that? There's
it's a majority.
In the Senate, there are 14 Democrats and 16 Republicans. Oh. Another Republican majority.
Right.
And of course, they have a Democratic governor and a Democrat AG. And thankfully, they do have a Democratic AG because the attorney general came out and said, I'm not going to bring charges against anyone. And she won her election by fewer than 300 votes.
That's integrity for is those what that is.
Right, totally. And for those of you who think that voting doesn't matter, remember that. The difference between having an attorney general in Arizona who said, I'm going to prosecute under this 1864 law because of what the Supreme Court did, and an attorney general who said, I'm not going to bring charges, was fewer than 300 votes
right.
in the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
So Biden is really leaning into this, though, and they just released a new campaign ad that they're running in Arizona where they are directly calling out Donald Trump.
Because of Donald Trump, millions of women lost the fundamental freedom to control their own bodies. And now, women's lives are in danger because of that. The question is, if Donald Trump gets back in power, what freedom will you lose next? Your body and your decisions belong to you, not the government, not Donald Trump. I will fight like hell to get your freedom back. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Pretty good, I think.
Yeah, good ad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
It's just an important election.
Yeah, it's so important.
It's important. Oh, and all of the cynical naysayers out there who, you know, I've seen more and more profiles of young voters are like, well, we need to just punish the Democrats because they're not, we need to send a message to them. You know, there's ways to send messages that don't involve putting back into power someone who wants to create a dystopian type of America. And I think we just need to get our fucking head screwed on straight here. So,
well, and that's true because Donald Trump is saying that he wouldn't sign a federal abortion ban. Never mind that you can't trust him.
Right.
But the people that he has surrounded himself with who actually want to put things in place have said that they don't need a federal abortion ban when they have the Comstock Act. And if you want to hear more about that, I did a long form video about that, including quotes that a Trump attorney has given saying specifically that he doesn't want Donald Trump to talk about the Comstock Act because he doesn't want the population to become aware of what their actual plans are. So we would love to know what you think about all of this. 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
It's the asshole of today. Jesse Waters.
Jesse Waters, a Fox News host. He used to be Bill O'Reilly's man on the street interview guy.
He's like lapdog that would go out and, you know, in horribly offensive and racist ways interview Asian people like in Chinatown in New York City and shit. He's just a vile fucking troll.
And now he's the new Tucker Carlson on Fox News, and he's also on The Five. He's, you know, one of the stars of Fox News. He went on Patrick Bet David's podcast, who I don't really know a lot about, and so I can't really speak to that other than doesn't seem to be super educated on a lot of the political issues that he talks about. And I think this is a prime example because, so the context for this conversation: Jesse Waters, Patrick Bet David. There's also other people who sometimes are talking in the background, so be aware of like these other voices that may pop up. They were talking about the California minimum wage. Specifically, Patrick Bet David was reading a Wall Street Journal article that said California businesses take on Gavin Newsom over tax hikes. Governor says ballot measure would decimate funding for basic services. Backers say it is needed in the high-cost state. Basically talking about how California businesses don't like the taxes in California. They don't like the minimum wage in California. Well, also, there's all these burdens.
California just raised the minimum wage for fast food workers to $20.
Yes.
Which I think predicated a lot of this. And I've seen screenshots out there of like the prices at In-N-Out before and after. And it's like a 3% increase in prices for like a 15 or 25% increase or something. It's way disproportionate, that price increase versus the wage increase. And it's a value proposition.
Right. It's almost no sacrifice on your part to pay a couple more cents on your burger in order to have someone have like somewhat of a livable wage in the state of California. But here's Jesse Waters, who, again, is given this massive platform on Fox News to talk about political issues, including the economy and minimum wage.
And you would hope he would do so astutely.
Yes, and you're going to hear very quickly that he has no idea how the world actually works.
Jesse, I know you love Gavin's policies. Oh. What are your thoughts about this wonderful governor's?
You're very good at math, so see if you can do this in your head. You probably can. If you're making $20 an hour to work at a fast food restaurant, all right, is that six figures? Are you making
No. 40 grand.
50 grand. 50 is just two exits and add a few zeros.
Yep. Okay, so
40K a year, okay, full time.
40K a year. Yeah. So, and then if your husband or wife is also there, you're making $100,000 as a family.
Sure.
Both working at McDonald's?
$80,000.
That is, okay, that's crazy. That is crazy, because that job really doesn't require much. So it's inflating the entire, you know, labor sector.
And the Happy Meal.
And the Happy Meal.
Unhappy, very unhappy.
Which I'm very unhappy about, but I believe Gavin Newsom will be president one day.
Can't get off that topic fast enough.
Right. Well, you know what I want to talk about is not this thing that I'm completely fucking up in epic fashion right now. Well, you know, Gavin Newsom might be president one day. Idiot.
So, of course, we know that making $20 an hour is not six figures. It's actually $41,600 a year.
And Jesse Waters thought that it was $100,000 a year.
Now, let's also talk about rental prices in California.
Yeah.
The median rent, and this is for all bedrooms in California, is $2,795.
Wow.
Almost $2,800 for rent in the state of California. So you're talking about giving someone $20 an hour. They're making $41,600 a year before taxes.
Yeah.
And he, what world is he living in? And think of, this is the same person who he's always attacking homeless people, saying that they have wine cellars and they're living it up, living on the street. I mean,
these are really things he says.
This conversation alone should tell you that Jesse Waters has nothing to offer you in terms of education, in terms of how the world works. This is someone who is so far removed from the experiences of everyday people that he thinks someone working at McDonald's, by the way, he called it an easy job. I would love for Jesse Waters to put in 40 hours on his feet at McDonald's. And then I want to check in with him after that week and ask him how that went. And we should give him the funds that he would make in a week and see what he could do with that. What could he do? I'm sure his dinner on any weeknight doesn't even, you know, isn't going to be covered by
listen,
that.
What I'd like, Brittany, is for you to give Jesse Waters a little bit more of a fair shake. Listen to this brilliant analysis.
So it's inflating the entire, you know, labor sector.
It's inflating the. So can we stop with this? I mean, honestly.
Also, it is remarkable to imagine this layout here of, for this podcast, where it's just this weird echo chamber with all of these dipshits, none of whom really live in the real world. I mean, Patrick Bet-David, I just did a video it's going to post on YouTube about him talking about, you know, I would be okay with the 14-year-old voting if they pay $10,000 in tax. Like, you have to earn the right to vote under the Constitution of the... They're just fundamentally bereft of any understanding of how things work in America, what our foundational principles are, how the Constitution works, what a right is versus what a privilege is. It's just fucking fantasy land, and they've been lucky enough, lucky like us, to fallen backwards to a situation where they have an audience.
Well, and that comes up too, because Patrick Bet-David actually had the audacity to say to Jesse Waters that he started from the bottom. And
Jesse Waters started from the bottom?
Yeah. And now, because now he's the Tucker Carlson of Fox News, right? And so I think he's saying, like, he started from the bottom, meaning that he was a production assistant. And Patrick Bet-David said, well, that's the story of all these great capitalistic companies like McDonald's. You always hear that they started as the burger flipper and then they became an owner. Yeah, okay. And so Jesse Waters, I'm just reading briefly about his history here on Wikipedia. His father, it looks like, was... he's the son of Stephen Waters, a teacher and child psychologist. Son of Stephen Waters, a teacher and child psychologist. Sorry, I'm trying to do it right now. Ann Purvis, this is written terribly. Daughter of Morton Bailey Jr., a publisher of Better Homes and Gardens magazine.
Right, he comes from money.
His maternal great-grandfather was Morton Bailey, publisher of the Saturday Evening Post. His maternal great-great-grandfather was the politician Morton S. Bailey. Waters' paternal grandfather was a cardiologist at the Veteran Administration Hospital in Newington, Connecticut.
So what you're painting a picture here is of a young man, Jesse Waters, who did the hard work, the gritty work of pulling himself up by his bootstraps, Brittany Page, and rising to the heights of anchor on the Fox News.
Yeah, I mean, my mom told me when I was a teenager she couldn't buy my shampoo anymore, and it was just Suave Mountain Berry. Like, it was 89 cents, so...
I mean, I'm not laughing about that, because that's fucking tragic, but come on, no, can we stop with this myth of meritocracy bullshit?
Yeah, exactly, and there was no mention of luck. It's, you started from the bottom. No, he didn't. No, he did not. And, you know, it's just such disrespect of people that are actually working hard every
day. You mean the six-figure salary earners who work at McDonald's? Those people?
Yeah, I mean, it's so... God, it's so insulting of people that work hard, even for people who like Jesse Waters and who follow him and act like he's this person who has this stranglehold on how the world works. He doesn't get it. He doesn't give a shit about you. And I just hope that at some point we can all understand that.
We'd love to know what you think. 657-464-7609. And of course, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone to idoubtit@dollamore.com. If you would like to help support this work, help make this work possible, help us create this work, $2 a month. Go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. It's a great way to help support this work. You get an ad-free version of the show. You get bonus Patreon-only content that we may or may not release to the entire audience. Maybe we should do a poll on Patreon and let the patrons decide.
We'll just, they get to decide the gatekeeping or not.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we love you guys. We appreciate you very much. Thanks for joining us today. We will see you next time on episode 912. I'm Jesse Dollamore. This right here is Brittany Page. And this has been I Doubt It.